One of the highlights of my time at seminary was a study tour we took to the Holy Land. I know some of you have been there to Israel, to Palestine, to see some of the sites, some of the places where Jesus walked. One of the particularly interesting things about the tour that I took was the leader we had, Dr. Gary Pratico. Gary was my Hebrew teacher, but his primary field of study was not biblical languages. His primary study of field was archaeology. And so when we went to the Holy Land, it was really an archaeological study tour. So we spent time in Jerusalem seeing some of those sites, but we also spent a lot of time in Jordan and in Egypt, traveling and seeing various biblical sites or even various non-biblical sites and studying and seeing how the archaeology shaped those things. And so it was great traveling with Gary because you could walk along and sometimes there were just remains of walls and we could see the walls. Sometimes you'd be walking along and something would catch one of the students' eyes and you'd pick something up and you'd take it over to Gary and look at it and he'd be like, oh, yeah, that's a potsherd from probably the early 4th century BC, this little tiny thing. And other times he's like, yeah, that's just a rock. Yeah. But number of the times we would go and we would visit sites and we would ride up in the bus and you'd get out of the site and you'd look and you're like, there's nothing here. And then you'd get a little bit closer and what you would see is just a little bit of an outline on the ground. And what it was oftentimes the foundation of a building or the foundation of a gate. And so we'd walk up and he'd say, oh, here you can see it. There'd be a few rocks sticking up where the archaeologists had dug a little bit. And he'd say, oh, this is a 6-chambered gate. And if you remember these stories in the Old Testament where they sat in the gates, but you had an idea from that little bit on the ground, that foundation, what the shape of the building would be and what its purpose was. And so today I want us to think about the ideas of foundations. And this idea of Jesus as our foundation, Aaron read a little while ago, and one of the verses there talked about Jesus being our foundation. He said, for no one can lay any foundation other than the one already laid, which is Jesus Christ. And so this idea of Jesus as a foundation, what does it mean? We sang songs earlier. The church is one foundation. So what does it mean? So we're reading from Paul's letter to the Corinthians. Paul was this early leader in the Christian church, an early follower of Jesus. That's not how he started. He started out as someone opposed to following Jesus. He saw Jesus' death on a cross as foolishness. He saw it as a curse. But then he had this radical encounter with Jesus. And he changed his mind and he began to preach and talk about who Jesus was and how our lives were to be shaped like Jesus. And he started churches all around the Mediterranean. One of them was in Corinth, which again, kind of on the Greek peninsula, what we call modern day Greece, on that peninsula there. And so he was teaching and he had taught this church, but they were struggling. They wanted to follow Jesus. They weren't deliberately trying to take themselves off track. They wanted to follow Jesus, but they were struggling. They were shaped by the world around them, the culture that bred competition and self-sufficiency, self-promotion. And what that led to was divisions in the church. People looking down on one another. They started, one of the things they often did was they wanted to attach themselves to a particular leader. And so you heard that about Apollos or Paul or Cephas. And so what it seems like happened were there were members in the church and they looked and was like, well, I'm part of that club. I'm part of that club. And the idea was if you could attach yourself to the right leader, it gave you status. Not unlike today. Sometimes we want to brand ourselves as attached to something in particular. And by being attached to that, it gives us value or gives us status. Maybe a ridiculous one might be sports teams, right? We wear our jerseys, we wear the sweatshirts, we wear a jacket. We say, oh, I'm a Michigan fan, or I'm a Michigan State fan, or I'm an Ohio State fan, or whatever it is. And so you attach yourself, and when your team wins, it somehow lifts you up, right? Even though you did absolutely nothing for that victory. You say, look, my team won. And you walk around, it's like, yeah, Michigan won yesterday. Or lost. I have no idea. I don't watch football anymore. So I don't know. Are they still playing even? So anyways, there's these things that are going on. And so there's this sense of like you gain status because you're attached to that. And so in the same way, these people in this early church, if they attached themselves to Apollos, and Apollos had a great day out debating people, and he had these eloquent words and was drawing lots of people to himself, it brought you status. It brought you recognition. You say, I belong to Apollos. But then what would happen is, if that person over there was following Paul, then maybe you looked at it and said, oh, now you're part of Paul's team. I'm part of Apollo's team. And so there were these divisions going on. And so what Paul is looking at is saying, we need to look at it differently. And so we're picking up kind of what he's been talking about in these earlier chapters about where people follow and who they're following. And really, if we want to put it down to a simple question, the question Paul was asking was, to what or whom do we belong? To what or whom do we belong? And what Paul is trying to do with the Corinthians is reshape their thinking. He's trying to reshape our thinking. And what he gets at, he starts off by saying, Apollos and Paul, they're only servants. They're not who you're following, truly. They're servants. And he picks this up later, but then he says, he makes this point in 3:9, where he says, for we are co-workers in God's service. You are God's field, God's building. So he's been using these farming and agricultural things, talking about it, but then he switches to this idea about buildings and farming. All right, he's been talking about agriculture, and he switches to the idea of a building. And the point he's making with the building is something different. So what's he getting at? He's getting to this idea of the foundation. So he's switching and saying, we're servants, and you are God's building. And then he goes on and he says this again about the building. By the grace God has given me, I laid a foundation as a wise builder, and someone else is building on it, but each one should build with care. For no one can lay any foundation other than the one already laid, which is Jesus Christ. In other words, he said, the foundation is Jesus. There's no other foundation. We're going to come back to that, but we want to think about Jesus as the only foundation. And if it's not clear, he's not talking about a literal building here. So what is he talking about when he's saying, we're building this foundation? He says this. He said, don't you know that you yourselves are God's temple and that God's Spirit dwells in your midst? And when he says this, I like there are, last week, if you were here, I mentioned there are numerous translations of the Bible. Because the Bible, especially like the New Testament written in Greek, and there are various translations. One of my favorite ones, it's not available in print, but it is available online. It's called the Y'all Version. And the Y'all Version is the idea in English. So if we think about it, in typical English, for those of in Midwestern English, when we say you, it can mean you singular or you plural. Now, in parts of our country, we could often have, you know, the idea of y'all, and y'all oftentimes referring to a multiple, or y'all, y'all, use y'all, whatever the different ways that say. But the idea there's a plural. And so when he says it here, he says, don't you know that y'all are God's temple? In other words, you as a group of people are God's temple. Now, there's certainly a sense in which individuals are, but here Paul is talking to a group. Y'all are God's temple, and God lives within you. And then if anyone destroys God's temple, God will destroy that person, for God's temple is sacred. And you together, again, you together, y'all together are that temple. I want to think about those thoughts for a minute. Now, often when I've read this, I think I've placed too much emphasis on myself in that verse. To say, look, I'm God's temple. Or we're God's temple. And so the focus becomes on what? Us. We are God's temple. But I think there's a subtle difference, and maybe there's not a whole lot of difference to see, but it's the stress is more on to whom we belong. The focus maybe isn't on the temple, but on whose temple it is. And he's saying, you are God's temple. You, in other words, you belong to God. And so even when we think about a church, and so here we'll take Fruitland Covenant Church here in Whitehall, it's a way of saying, this is not our church, in the sense of we own it. In fact, the bank owns it right now, but that's another story. But there's not the church in the sense we own it, but we are stewards in the sense of we're managing. But who is the true owner of the church? Who does it truly belong to? It belongs to God. Which means as we plan, as we serve, we're turning to God. And so I think of even right now, I live in a parsonage, and over the years, I've owned houses. I've also rented houses. When you're a renter, it's not your house. It's not your apartment, which means sometimes to even hang something on the wall, to change the paint color. You ask the one who owns it, right? I heard somebody refer to it, and it may be a little of a stretch. What do you call the person who owns it? The landlord, right? And we think of the Lord. So I mean, there might be a bit of a stretch to say, it's the Lord. So when we think about the church and as we're planning, as we're making plans, sometimes we get into like, oh, what are we going to do at church? What are we going to do with our church? And what we need to do is stop, take a step back and remind ourselves, it's not our church. It's God's church. And so as we plan, as we serve, we remember that. And we also say, not only does it belong to God, but God lives here. And so in the ancient world, there were temples all over the place. Corinth, the city Paul is writing to, was filled with temples. One of the major ones was a temple to Aphrodite. There was another one to Artemis. These huge temples, and the temples were seen as the dwelling place of the gods, a place where the gods would come and they would live. And what he's saying here is, for us, God also lives, but he doesn't live in a building. Where does God live? In us, as a people. And so, on the one hand, that might feel like it's kind of puffing you up. And this is not what he wants to do with the Corinthians. He doesn't want to build them up, get their ego any bigger, but he says, oh, God lives in you. He's not simply saying you're special because God lives in you. He's making the point that their divisions, when they fight with one another, they're profaning the temple. They're making it dirty. They're making it unholy. Why? Because if God lives in and among us, if God lives in you and in you and you, when you fight with each other, you're degrading a place where God lives. And so he's getting to this point where acting contrary to the way of Jesus, and it's meant to be, we, the temple, are meant to be a holy place set apart for God. And so that means we need to be who God has called us to be. And what does it mean? To be built on the foundation of Jesus. And so thinking about a foundation, one way to think about it is Jesus is the source of all our life. You know, the foundation, when you have the foundation, you can't do anything else other than what the foundation provides. If you have a lousy foundation, what happens to your house? It falls down, right? When I was thinking of foundations, I was thinking of when we moved, Christine and I moved to Texas back in 1998. And we moved to Carrollton, which was a suburb of Dallas. And we bought our first house together. And as we were buying the house and moving in, and the realtor was talking to us and our neighbors were talking to us, they said, you have to make sure you water your foundation. I said, water the foundation? I mean, I'm familiar with like watering plants and trees. Well, why do you water a foundation? Because where we lived, the ground was almost entirely clay. And so what would happen was if you didn't water the foundation, the clay pulled away from the building and the foundation cracked and crumbled. You would go to the phone book. This was ancient days when there were phone books. And in the old world of phone books, you turn to the section for foundations, and there's page after page after page of people for foundation repair. Because you needed to have a solid foundation, because if your foundation cracked, it wasn't just a problem with the foundation. What happened? The whole house started to crack and build. And so when we say we need a solid foundation as Jesus, it's saying that's what holds everything up. And so when we think about our faith, when we think about our church, and we say Jesus is the foundation, we're saying everything has to be built on him. And not only is it built on him, but it's a gift from him. He laid the foundation. He's the foundation because he gave to us. And you hear this language of gift and of grace in there, of how God gave to us. And so we remember that both as individuals and as a church, to say he's our foundation. So what does that look like? Part of that looks like is to say, if he's the foundation, if he's what we're building on, we should probably talk to him when we're building. We should probably talk, what do we call that when we talk to God? Prayer. And so it's a reminder in part of the necessity of prayer in all that we're doing. And the careful point I want to make here is that that can often become a should. And it's a good idea, I think, in the Christian life to try and avoid. Sometimes we can push we, pastors, preachers, can sometimes push on a congregation feelings of obligation. If I wanted to, it would be really easy for me to make you feel guilty. And my goal is not to make you feel guilty. My goal is to proclaim this good news in Jesus and what he's doing. And so what I want us to see is this idea of foundation and prayer as an invitation. To say, here's this thing that God invites us to. He provides a foundation and he invites us to build on it. And he invites us to learn from him. And we can do that through prayer. Another way to think about foundation is to not add on to Jesus. So again, if we think of a foundation of a building, and you have a foundation for a building, and you put an addition on, your addition needs a foundation too, right? But the temptation is to say, if Jesus is the foundation, we start adding on, the addition is no longer founded on Jesus. It's founded on something else. And so we can see sometimes how we make things just simply an add-on to Jesus. Or sometimes what happens is we make ourselves and not Jesus the center. In other words, we start to build the foundation on ourselves, on our own gifts. And so we think of ourselves as central, and Jesus simply becomes a way to manage our lives. A way to help us cope. He becomes someone to bail us out. And what Paul is inviting us to say, Jesus is the foundation. He's the one, and when we build on him, we'll stand the test. When we start building on our own gifts, our own talents, our own ideas, our own thoughts, then we will fail. But built on him also means he's the shape of our ministry and of our life. And so again, if you have a square foundation, what shape is your house going to be? Square. If you build a round house on a square foundation, how well will it stand? Parts of it might stand, right? So if we have a Jesus foundation, which has a shape of a cross, that means our lives need to be cross-shaped. And so this is Paul's refrain. If you stay for this entire series in Corinthians, we're going to hear this phrase again and again. The idea of, in fact, if you read all of Paul, so Paul, this early follower of Jesus I talk about, didn't just write to the city in Corinth. He has numerous letters in our New Testament. These writings are what we call the New Testament, letters to the Romans and the Corinthians, the Ephesians, the Galatians, the Philippians. And so many of them focus and revolve around this idea of being conformed or shaped or molded or living in Christ. And so this is what it is. And so we need to be shaped like Jesus and looking like him. So if Jesus is the crucified one and he's lived and shaped on that, then we have to live a life that's shaped like Jesus. So if we build on the foundation, we start with the foundation, say Jesus is the foundation. He's the base on which we lay, but then we have to build up and remain in conformity or in the shape of the foundation, so in the shape of Jesus. And so we think about the cross as a way to shape our lives and to mold it as a individual and as a church. And the shape of the cross is a shape that demonstrates to us self-giving. It demonstrates sacrifice. It demonstrates love. In fact, later in this letter to the Corinthians, there's chapter 13, what we call chapter 13. You've probably heard it at weddings, but it's all about love. And it's saying this is the shape of the cross. The shape of the cross is love. So we're called to be a loving people. We're called to be a people who gives of ourselves. A number of years ago, there was a book written by a man named James Davison Hunter. And the title of the book was Culture Wars. And he chronicled in dialogue how we oftentimes engage in war on culture. And what I would suggest is, if we think about the life of Jesus, Jesus didn't engage in culture wars. Because a culture war, in a war, there are allies and enemies. Jesus didn't see people in those ways. In fact, what Paul says is, while we were yet enemies, while we were opposed, Jesus died for us. And so this is a sense of loving those who are different from us. And so it's an invitation to say, the church isn't about attacking the culture. The church isn't about attacking the enemy. It's about loving. Certainly, they're sharing the wisdom and inviting them into something, but it's not a means of destruction and not a means of destroying. It's not a way to say, oh, we destroyed them. It's a way to say we loved them and gave our lives for them. And so Paul does this, and just a little bit, we're going to look at another later after the section that Aaron read. He talks about what do the leaders look like in this sort of church? And these are the kind of ones where I look and I say, wow. Because I've been in vocational ministry, full-time ministry, if you want, since 1998. So long time, lots of sermons, lots of teaching. And I've always tried to make Jesus the center of what I'm doing. I've always tried to make this idea of Christ crucified as the center. But then I reread these and makes me start to wonder sometimes, in what way have I been shaped by this idea of Christ crucified? And so I read about the leaders as Paul describes them, and he says this. He's talking to the Corinthians, already you have what you want, already you have become rich. You have begun to reign without us. How I wish that you really had begun to reign so that we might also reign with you. And so there's these sort of sarcastic remarks to the Corinthians about satisfaction and wealth and power. And so he's kind of getting at them. They've been preaching or living a gospel, a good news, a message of power. And he's saying the life of Jesus crucified looks different. He says, we are fools for Christ. How often do we want to brand ourselves as fools? He says, but you are so wise in Christ. We are weak, but you are strong. You are honored. We are dishonored. And so he's contrasting in this way of following Jesus is so different. It's foolish. He's talked about this again and again. It's like, it doesn't make any sense. He's dishonored rather than strong. He says, to this very hour, we go hungry and thirsty. We are in rags. We are brutally treated. We are homeless, which sounds a whole lot like Jesus. Like the Jan in a children's message earlier, the foxes have holes, the birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place. In other words, Jesus, he lived as a homeless man. He was brutally treated. And so this idea of saying, we live a life that's shaped and looks like Jesus. For it seems to me that God has put us apostles. Apostles is just the fancy word. These people who were sent by God on display at the end of the procession. So he's picturing this idea of when captives or POWs would be brought home. They would be brought in this giant procession, this giant parade to humiliate and to show them their captives. And to those condemned to die in the arena. And oftentimes when Rome, the conquering, would bring back enemies from war, one of the uses they would have for them or one of the things they would do with their prisoners is put them in the Colosseum or in other places to serve as gladiators. Gladiators intended for them to die for the sake of other people. It says, we have been made a spectacle to the whole universe, to angels as well as human beings. And it says, we work hard with our own hands. When we are cursed, we blessed. When we are persecuted, we endure it. When we are cursed, we blessed. When persecuted, we endure it. Which sounds a whole lot like Jesus when he says, bless those who persecute you. And so again, he's saying, this is the shape of our lives, the shape of our lives as leaders. And I think consequently of all the churches, one that looks like Jesus. And when we are slandered, we answer kindly. Boy, if we could just live that out sometimes, huh? When we are slandered, we answer kindly. Because I know when I'm slandered, that is not my first response. And then this verse, if you were here last week, I mentioned that we have become the scum of the earth, the garbage of the world right up to this moment. In other words, the cast-offs, the stuff you scrape off the bottom of your feet. Because we follow Jesus. When we place the folly of Christ at the center, when we follow the foolishness of a Jesus who is crucified, we're regarded, and he's saying, we're regarded as filth and garbage. He's talking about himself. He says, but when you follow that kind of wisdom, people look down on you. It doesn't make any sense. It's foolishness. But he's saying, this is the only way, because that's the only sure foundation. He's saying, this cross-shaped life, this one built on the foundation of Jesus, this one built on a God who died for us, this one who's built on loving your enemies, this one that's built on caring for those around you, this one that's built on seeing everyone as having value, doesn't make sense to the world. It looks like foolishness. And when we act that way, people see us as garbage. People see us scum in the sense of, that doesn't make any sense. Get out of here. We need a way that works in this world. Because that's so often what we want. When someone goes to the bookstore, looks online for a self-help book, some way to make it through the world. What do they want? They want something that works, because if you read a book, if you look at a book, what do you have on the back of the book oftentimes? Endorsements, right? Have you ever seen an endorsement that says, The suggestions in here are foolishness. If you follow this advice in here, people are going to think you're scum. If you follow this, people are going to laugh at you. People are going to mock you. People are going to treat you down. Whoever asks for that, maybe people get those endorsements, but they certainly don't put them on the back of the book. But that's the way we live. We want this. But what Paul is saying here is saying, this is what it looks like. He said, when you follow this way of Jesus, it looks like foolishness. It looks like foolishness. Put that in air quotes here. Looks like foolishness, but it's the wisdom of God, which means it brings life. And so when he says earlier, he says, if anyone builds on this foundation using gold, silver, costly stones, their work will be shown for what it is because the day will bring it to light. In other words, on the last day, it will be revealed with fire and the fire will test the quality of each person's work. When you build on that foundation, it will endure. It's not easy. It's not easy to build on a crushing, but it's not easy to love those who persecute you. It's not easy to bless those who fight against you, but that's the call of Jesus. And so he's saying, build on that foundation, this foundation of gift that God has given to us in Jesus. He's inviting us, Fruitland, and individuals sitting here, to build on that foundation, the foundation of Jesus and him crucified, the foundation of a God who loves us, the foundation of a Jesus who gave his life for us. Let's build on that foundation. Live that kind of life. Jesus is the only sure foundation. The only one that won't crack. The only one that won't fall. The only one that won't fail. And so our invitation today is to build on that. To build on Jesus, the one sure foundation. Amen.